When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Deconstructive Criticism. My name is Aaron Flam. Omar Makram visits Deconstructive Criticism to talk about his recent termination from an association that battles honor culture. We will talk about how the fight against honor culture is hindered by cancel culture. But first, I want to thank you for supporting Deconstructive Criticism. You make this production possible. If you don't support Deconstructive Criticism but want to, you can at patreon.com/AaronFlam in one word with capital letters, via PayPal, Bitcoin, or on Swish 07689-43737. 07689-43737. 07689-43737. I will be going on a book tour this fall, and you can find tickets on my webpage, aaronflam.com/merchandise. The book in question is This is a Swedish Tiger, a book that landed me in court, and it is also available from aaronflam.com/merchandise. Omar Makram is special. The first time I interviewed him, he had just burned a Quran, filmed it, and posted it to YouTube in an attempt to prove to Swedish immigration authorities that he was indeed an atheist and feared for his life if sent back to Egypt, where he came from. Since then, he has gotten political asylum and has, up until very recently, worked with the association Never Forget Pela and Fadime, GAPF for short, against honor culture. Primarily within the large and largely Muslim immigrant community here in Sweden. Part of Omar's work has consisted of leading workshops for high school students, making them discuss values that emanate from practical examples of honor culture. Meaningful work that ended when Omar started a podcast with some friends. The accusation or accusations against Omar are obscurely vague in a Kafkaesque way, all too familiar here in Sweden. When Omar first came, having severed his ties to his upper-middle-class Muslim upbringing in Egypt in search of freedom here in Sweden, I told him he might have picked the wrong country to apply for asylum in. Since then, I've bided my time for a tremendously smug "I told you so." But jokes aside, to do what Omar has done, challenge and change his worldview, takes strength, a strength of conviction that is easy to sympathize with. I have come to know him as a principled individual. What has happened only harms the fight against real injustice. Omar Makram's previous visits to Deconstructive Criticism can be found in the description of this episode at aaronflam.com, and a link to that you can find in the description of this episode, regardless of what platform you're listening on. Here to talk about how cancel culture hinders the fight against honor culture, Omar Makram. Enjoy. Welcome back to Deconstructive Criticism, Omar Makram.
Thank you, Arnon. Great to
be here. Third time's the charm.
Third time's the charm.
Do you remember what I told you when you were here first time about Sweden and what you might learn after having experienced it for a while longer?
No, but you can remind me.
Maybe that it isn't as tolerant, liberal, open-minded as you thought it'd be.
True, I stand corrected.
Yes, you do. Because we're here today to discuss a topic that is a bit sensitive to you, I suppose.
Yeah.
You're still a bit raw.
Yes.
Yes.
That one can say.
That one can say. Mm. So will you care to explain without too much frills what has happened?
All right. Let's give it a shot. So in December last year, me and some of my friends, Mustafa Panshiri, Ashkan Fardust, Hanif Azizi, started a pod with Chang Frick, Sista Molti then. So the idea with the pod was basically that we would record our dinner conversations and just release it to the public and see what happens. Can you have that unfiltered, unrestrained degree of freedom in Sweden or not? And not long after, more precisely in February, so 2 months after we started, I started receiving some notes of concern from my workplace about the pod.
And what's notes of concern? Is it a chopped off head of a horse in your bed in the morning? Or
well, it went like that. It was a gradual process. So first of all, I was working at GAPF, Glöm aldrig Pelag Fadima, an organization that, a fantastic organization that works actually against honor culture and oppression here in Sweden. And I was a part of this work in 4 years, basically.
Because I've read a few interviews with you about your work at Pelag Fadima. You've written quite extensively in the Swedish media since you came here about your work. And it seems to have been quite important work.
Yes, and
sorely needed.
Yes, and it's a question that I really care about as well, and I have both like personal experience and how to say also intellectual knowledge about what causes honor violence and oppression and so on. So I really wanted to contribute in the work against honor violence and oppression in Sweden to the extent that I could.
In Sweden, this has been a sort of a dual fight for you guys who are against honor culture. Personally, yes. I don't take sides.
Yes, but it has been a taboo
question. To talk about honor culture, yes. Because you're a racist if you do.
Racist and Islamophobe and so on. And especially GAPF and above all Sara Muhammad, the founder of GAPF, has done a great work in bringing or like highlighting the honor culture question and breaking the taboo around it in Sweden.
Apart from writing article, what was your day-to-day chores at this, foundation, I suppose? It's a foundation, right?
Förening.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so one can say, the official title is Sakkunnig and
projektledare. Which means expert, basically.
Yes. Yeah. So I was in charge of producing a lot of the, let's say, intellectual material that has to do with the questions that we are driving.
And what questions are those?
So basically all the aspects and structures that have to do with honor culture and what should be done about them. Things like whether child marriage, hijab, religious schools, laws to prevent like the children and so on to be taken away by their parents to their country of origin, to when they start being too Swedish or the girls having boyfriends and things like that. In addition to that, also I was in charge of a lot of our events, including our events in Almedalen. We have also yearly events called Fadima Dagarna. I was also responsible for a part of it, responsible for the content also in our events and seminars and so on.
And you go around to high schools and do workshops.
That too. I also wrote like a book, Förbjuden Kärlek, Forbidden Love, a manga book, that it is about honor violence and oppression. And I used to go to schools to hold workshops on it and talk to the students and so on about these questions. More and more I was becoming, one can say, in addition to Sara Muhammad, the face of GAPF, a speaker of the organization, if you want to say, and so on. And like you said, also like writing debate articles and participating in debates and seminars and all that.
And then you started this podcast with your friends.
Yes, yes.
And some of these friends are fairly well known in Sweden.
I mean,
would Jean say most Frick of it is basically like, the enfant terrible of Swedish high society.
That one can say, yes. Well, more or less everybody, well, everybody in the pod is, are public figures, so to speak. Oh. So
what happened?
Right.
Notices started coming. Not horses' heads, per se. But
well, actually, that's also another thing. I never really received the warning, which I've been told this is something that is common practice, that your employer would give you a warning when there is something that they don't like. But that I did not get.
Have you thought about it? I mean, in retrospect, maybe you got a very passive-aggressive warning that you failed to notice?
I can say what happened, then it's up to you and the listeners to draw their conclusions.
Please.
The first mention I got of the pod was a person from the board, GAPF's board at the time, when we were having a meeting together, work meeting. At the end of the meeting, it came something like, by the by, what's that? What's the thing with that pod thing you started? And I just explained, it's like me and my friends started a pod in our free time and so on. And it's like we were just like discussing issues that could be somewhat sensitive and so on. But it's important for me, for my freedom. And I think it's important culturally as well. And we blend both seriousness and humor and so on. And I think it's also fun. And that person expressed their... How to say? Well,
dislike?
Dislike. Yeah, dislike of the personal dislike of the pod. And that maybe it was like street language or is problematic language, or I can't remember the exact formulation, but something about the language and the jargon and the pod and so on that that person didn't really like. And that person said that the question about the pod will be lifted to the board and they will discuss it. I have not been told to abstain in any way at that point. I was like, okay, fair enough. So I continued both with my work and the pod under that time. And a little while after, I received another call from the same person. And that person told me that they want me to immediately pause with the pod.
That's when you disappeared from the pod for a
exactly.
while.
Exactly. No. Yes. Immediately pause with the pod until the board has made a decision about it.
That was horrible. I mean, you left an Omar-shaped hole in Swedish society. We felt it.
Yeah. And I did, and then a person asked me also, like, have you already recorded any episodes that have not been released yet? And I said, yeah, we recorded one. And the person said, okay, but I guess it doesn't go to stop it. And I said, no, it's not possible to stop it. And then I paused with the pod. I followed that instruction. And it so happened that that conversation that we had that we recorded before in the pod, it was like a bit long, so we divided it into two. So I then informed that person again, by the way, it's the same conversation, but it will be two episodes. I did not continue with recording. That person was, okay, thank you for telling me. Then I paused with the pod, and I then received new information from the same person that the board has decided to give me an ultimatum, either the work at GAPF or the pod. And this is where things for me also got...
And it should be said, I think, for listeners who might not be familiar with your podcast, that... you have Hanif Azizi, he's a working police officer of some renown, and none of it's bad. And Mustafa Panshir used to be a police officer. He works with integration between immigrants and Swedes. And then you have
Mr. Ashkan Fardost, who's a PhD in organic chemistry, and then Chang Frick, who's Chang Frick.
Who's Chang Frick? Yes, exactly. So at that point, I found myself in a very difficult situation psychologically as well, because to me, there is really nothing more important than freedom. My freedom I value above everything else. It's also why I had to leave my country. For me, it felt absurd that I would flee Egypt because of my freedom to express myself and think freely, and come to Sweden chasing this dream of ultimate freedom, and then I'm not able to be free. So it really rubbed me the wrong way, and I found myself in a dilemma that it was a stressful period, because I also really loved my work at GAPS.
Because you had fled a form of honor culture.
Yes.
And then you come to a form of cancel culture.
Yes.
I'm not equating the two. They're
no.
different. But yes. there are similar mechanisms underneath that sort of reinforces both of them.
Yes. The idea of freedom and the freedom to be oneself and freedom to associate with whoever you want and to be yourself. It's absent in both. So I found it difficult actually to make a decision then because of that. And especially,
it's a bros versus hoes sort of situation.
Well, that's one way to put it.
I'm sorry, if it gets too serious, I have to.
That's one way to put it. But and I started to, because I actually never really thought that things would escalate to this degree, because GAP has also been very, you know, free språket
And they've done good work, and
yes.
they've gotten a lot of shit for doing what they do. I mean, they were founded because of two honor killings in Sweden, when no one wanted to talk about honor killings, and then they've been working diligently to make it an issue, and they've succeeded in
doing
that.
They have succeeded, yes. Absolutely. And also, I didn't expect it to escalate that much, I expected it also to be maybe, like I would get comments about maybe that I should modify something in the pod, how I express myself and so on. And also especially that most of the comments that I got from the board about the pod are things actually that not me who has said, but Chang Frick who has said these things that they find problematic. And some of the things I said also, to be fair.
Okay, so let's go through them. Chang says inappropriate things all the time. That's pretty much what he does. So no one should be surprised. But there's a problem there, because the board of PLM, Never Forget PLM Fadime, they have a problem with you just being in the same room with him.
Well, this is also where it gets like a bit complicated, because there is nuance there. It's not that they necessarily have a problem that Chang is in the pod. Let's say if Chang, for example, does not behave as Chang in the pod, they would not have a problem. Like, have you listened to him, for example, when he's on Kvartal Kvartal?
No, I haven't.
He has a different character there as well. So he's like more clean in language, more tries to be more establishment-like, so to speak.
All right, then I have to listen. I would like to, I mean, just the thought of him attempting to be, you know, like a civilized person is fun.
Yes, so had he had that mask on during the pod, I don't think it would have been a problem necessarily.
Nor would it have been as much fun.
And that's also true.
And also, it wouldn't have been this manifestation for freedom that you and your friends hoped the podcast would be.
Mm.
So
exactly. And then during that period, when I've been told also that I can take whatever time I need to decide, as long as I'm pausing with the pod, it's all good, no problem. So this is like the message that I received. And I was like, okay. And also, there was an attempt to make me stay. Like, I've been told, you're doing great work, don't throw it away, this pod is not the way to go, you can do like more change here in GAPF and so on.
So sort of a nice job you have here.
Yes.
Would be a pity if something happened to
it. a little bit. Although at this time, there was definitely no no talk at all of letting me go. It was like the ball is in your court, kind of. Choose the pod or choose Gapf, either way. But we would be happy if you choose Gapf. This was the gist of it. And then started the process of... I'm not so sure exactly what happened. This is like where things get a little bit like murky for me, because they started to kind of like push me to make a decision.
So, but just for a moment, let's rewind, because you said there were things Shang had said, but there were also things you had said in the podcast that they had taken offense with.
Yes.
Or had problems with.
Yes.
Yes. And what are these things that you...
At that point in time, I actually have not been told yet. It came at the second stage.
The stage we're at now, where it's murky.
At the stage afterwards. So there starts to be an attempt to try to push me to make a decision, but also something that I started to perceive making me want to leave.
And what is that?
For example, I received then another call, and I've been told by that same person that the board has no longer trust in me for Truanda, and that I can no longer be Gap's front figure or face. I will stop with all the lectures, because I was also giving lectures and so on. I will not have contact with politicians. I will not go to schools anymore. I will, even the articles that I would write, I would not have my name on them. Things of the sort.
So they were trying to phase you out, but keep your competence.
Something behind the curtains, hide me in a way. And I was like, well, okay, it's sad, but fine, I comply, kind of. And then started this process of also trying to restrict my online presence. And so I've been told, I can't remember the exact wording, but like, for there was a tweet about Islam that I wrote after this, when Muricha Dyomsov said that Islam är en avskyvärd religion och ideologi. And like, I saw this like knee-jerk reaction from everybody trying to defend Islam. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? And then I had this sarcastic tweet that I wrote, stå upp för Islam, konvertera idag. Just like, you know. And then that person from the board talked to me about this tweet, and they said that is inappropriate. And
how would anyone perceive that tweet as inappropriate? I mean, seriously, because either you're against Islam and agree with Yomsov, and in that case, it's just a funny tweet, or you're a devout Muslim and want people to convert to Islam, in which case, it's a great tweet.
this is true, but there started to be like what I perceive as me coming and under additional scrutiny in this whole process, because during the whole time I've been in Sweden, I've been incessantly criticizing Islam online and criticizing, making fun of it, whatever. And this has never been a problem, really.
And this should be said that you grew up as a devout Muslim in Cairo, Egypt.
Yes, and then I left Islam, and this is why I have asylum here in Sweden as well, political asylum. So it was a part of my whole my whole thing.
You're waking up with Sam Harris.
Yes. Something like that. So then I've been told that I shouldn't like write things online that could be problematic or something like that. I can't remember the exact wording, but like problematic from Gap's point of view. And then when I asked, like, but what could that be? I've been told, well, it seems that you obviously don't know. So let us know first before you post something that might be controversial, and you need to get approval first. And I've then also been at some other point, have been told not to retweet anything that has to do with the pod system or Tidem, for example, or like, how to say, spread it online and so on.
So in effect, you had chosen them. You had chosen your job.
No.
No?
That was still my period of trying to make a decision. And I was complying with the instructions that I get from work until I made that decision.
Oh.
And then, I don't know if like members of the board started triggering one another or what, I don't know, because I was not in the pod anymore. And then eventually that person came to me and said, okay, the board has decided that basically you need to either we'll fire you or you leave. Basically, I was no longer given the option to stay.
Even though you were not doing the podcast?
No. And even though I complied with all the instructions that I got.
Okay. So this is a bit weird.
It is a bit strange, yes. It is, I guess, I don't know how things function here in Sweden, but it is strange, at least logically strange for me. But I mean, maybe they decided that, if I try to also, but this is here speculation, it's also possible that they started to realize that I'm a bit of a loose cannon, that I really have this passion to be free debater in Sweden talking about like sensitive issues and things like that.
Yeah, well, I would say maybe you're a liability to them.
Yeah.
But you're not a loose cannon. I mean, you're fairly rational. Mm-hmm. And you have a few core principles that you are not afraid to state, and you act and speak and write accordingly. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like you go off the deep end and start talking about fist-fucking nuns with Drano. So, you understand.
I understand what you mean. Yeah, yeah, I understand. But I guess maybe from their point of view, because it seems that even my participation in the pod for them was something that kind of like unimaginable or irresponsible of me to do while working in GAP from their point of view, while it's not from mine. And this is why there was this kind of like disconnect between how we see the ability to express oneself publicly while working in the organization. And they wanted me, and it's what seemed to me, they wanted me and the organization to become one, that I would basically, everything that I express online is not my personal view, but it's GAPF. So GAPF cannot criticize Islam. GAPF can only criticize Islam in connection to honor culture, for example. And
but Sarah Muhammad has criticized Islam, hasn't she?
I know, but Sarah also, she was not really, at least very active in this process as much as I know. She was...
Because GAPF have done tremendous work in Sweden, and they continue to do so.
Yes.
But there is another aspect of this, and that is that a Swedish, förening foundation, then I don't really know how to translate it, but it's like a foundation. They also apply for grants, and those grants come from where?
From the state, and this is a dilemma. And this is also something that I only thought about recently, whether any entity or an organization can be totally free and independent if they are also dependent on the state.
Because it's not such a strange idea for a foundation that has a clear purpose for its spokesperson to be perfectly aligned with that purpose.
I guess so. Although perhaps when it comes to just GAPF, I had different expectations, and they are founded expectations based on my behavior throughout those 4 years that I worked there. I had absolute freedom to express myself in every aspect that also does not have to do with honor culture. And my views on Islam, they were very well known to everybody, for example. And it has never been a problem. This is why it's not that I started to do something totally new, just to test and see if it works. I have been free to express myself fully while working at GAPF before. And that's something that I loved about GAPF, and loved about Sarah Muhammad also.
So it becomes a problem when you start with this podcast for some reason that we can call Changfrick.
One way also to, if I try to like portray things from their perspective as well, there was a process of me also growing within the organization and becoming more and more connected to it. That also can be something that has caused discomfort if I'm perceived by some as controversial, let's say. But so I received then this ultimatum. I received this basically that I need to, they decided that I need to go.
It's an interesting idea because the entire raison d'être of the organization is controversial.
Yes, yeah. In a way. But maybe they don't want to add like fuel to the fire or something.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Then I had another meeting with where also like Unionen, Facket were involved in with two members from the board to go through all the reasons why I can no longer be in GAPF.
And you're a member of the union?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. And basically most of the meeting were reciting quotes from the pod to demonstrate that it's unacceptable for me to be in the pod and working in GAPF, that basically because of what is being said in the pod, it goes against GAPF's Värdegrund. They have perceived the pod to be sexist and humiliating to women, mostly because of things Shang Frick say in the pod, but also some of the things that I said.
How so?
Here's the thing. I think this is some kind of, it stems from some sort of puritanism, I would say. Both sexual puritanism and linguistic puritanism. First, if we take this thing about sexual puritanism, I would say it has to do with also what I term gender relativism. That there are, even Sweden, when Sweden says that they are aspiring for a gender equal society, that's not really true, as I've come to discover. They are aspiring for a gender relativist society. They think that there are some things that women should be allowed to say and do, that men should not be allowed to say and do, especially when it comes to sex. So a group of women who gather talking about their sex or the sexual experience and so on can be seen as empowering and good. A group of men who do exactly the same thing can be seen as problematic and sexist. And that is something that I totally reject. I'm aspiring for a gender equal society where everybody...
Is it really relativism or is it just reversed sexism? Or just sexism? From women against men.
Yes, yes, that also
misandry,
can be said.
As it's also called.
Yes, that can be said also. One of the things, for example, that has been cited as problematic that I said is that when I talked about my first sexual experience and that the girl that I was with, she put the condom on my dick with her mouth. And
well, goats don't have fingers.
So in that sense, I'm not so sure what's being said. Like, it's like, is oral sex sexist or is it sexist when a condom is involved or what? I don't know. And another thing that I said was also that I talked about an experience being catfished on Tinder with a girl who turned out to be obese and that I basically... did not want to have sex with her. And this was perceived as also making comments on women's appearance. Although I find it hard to think that if it was a girl who talked about being catfished on Tinder and the guy turned out to be obese, that anybody would think this is something problematic that a girl talks about. So this was another thing.
I'm pretty sure it's called body activism.
And basically the use of the word pussy, it was also perceived as problematic that this is where also this language puritanism comes into play, because it seems to me of something that really rubs me the wrong way in Sweden quite often, how you say something is way more important than what you're saying. And
we're very spoiled as a nation. So we generally focus on tone rather than substance.
This really rubs me the wrong way because I just like care about substance.
Yes.
And to me, how you express yourself is not really relevant as long as it's linguistically coherent to convey your message. So for example, I don't see when I described like, instead of saying having high access to like sexual mates, I say high access to pussy. One can think that this is like vulgar language or whatever, but everybody understands what I mean, especially in the context. But I understand that from their perspective, they can perceive this something sexist to say. Although I disagree myself, because this is not discriminatory in any way. Things about Shang using the word batik hexa. I don't know even how this would be translated in English.
What is batik in English? I don't even know that.
Yeah, but well, your listeners would understand the term. So that's pretty much it.
And now you're fired.
We came into an agreement and I left. I was forced to leave.
But there is some point to the fact that they have to apply for grants from other foundations. I mean, I think the Queen to Be, her and her husband's foundation gives you money, and there are a few other foundations I found,
I kind of understand. It's a dilemma, you know, because it becomes a vicious cycle. One part of me is disappointed and thinking like I would have really hoped if GAPF has continued focusing on individual freedom and disregarded other consideration when it comes to finance and so on. Because also if you think about it, had finance been the focus of GAPF since the very beginning, they would not have been able to say the things that they have been saying, and they have not been able to break the taboo around honor culture.
And you liked your job there.
I loved it. And I've been told that I do a really good job as well. But at the same time, I also understand that they kind of like need to survive, well, both politically and financially, within a culture that is not, this is very restrictive when it comes to how one expresses oneself and who you talk with.
It's the reason why we need an organization like GAPF, because, real problems are ignored here routinely.
Yeah. But so I understand maybe that they felt that there can be a risk in them not being able to continue performing their work if they are associated with me. Some people say this is a founded risk. Some others say that it's not, because it's also very difficult to being cut off from state money and so on for an organization that works against honor culture. So yeah, here we are.
Yeah. So from working against repression to being repressed.
Yeah. Although I never really. I'm always uncomfortable taking on a victim role. It just doesn't suit me.
No, it doesn't.
No. So I just speak my mind and I do my thing. And
what will you do now then?
For the time being, I'm writing for Bulletin and also just focusing on the pod as well, System Alti then. And things are going well on both of these fronts.
Yeah.
For me. And perhaps I'll also start focusing on writing a book, maybe.
That would be welcome. About what?
Partly about my process of maybe leaving Islam and leaving my country and the history behind it. And then also my analysis of Swedish society compared to the Middle East. And how can there be, because they are extremely opposite culturally, but I also can see some things that are some similarities. For example, when it comes to this idea of Puritanism, especially when it comes to sex.
It's interesting because, you know, most people's prejudice about Sweden is that we're the most sexually liberal country in the world.
Well, this is where things get also complicated, because my analysis is like this. Sweden has been making attempts to desexualize sex and sexuality, to make it more of a transaction that does not really have to do with lust.
Or money.
Oh, that too. but it's like there is this kind of like almost some kind of stigmatization to being drawn to the carnal aspect of sexuality. That, for example, it is looked down upon to openly talk about, to openly sexualize the female body, let's say. And that reminds, can remind me a little bit of Islamic conservatives who also say that, you know, the sin of the flesh, and you should like kind of like avert. So that, for example, the concept of, in Arabic, it's called ghadd al-basar, and this means to guard your
virtue,
or no, guard your
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Gaze. Guard your gaze.
Okay.
It reminds me very much of this concept of the male gaze. You know, it's actually the same thing.
Yes.
That you're not supposed to look at the female body with lust. And that is something that I have perceived here in Sweden. And it seems to me that there has been, you know, in the feminist sex wars, there was this conflict between sex-positive feminists and sex-negative feminists. And in some countries in Europe, sex-positive feminists won, and in some others, sex-negative feminists won. And I would say in Sweden, sex-negative feminists won. So if you contrast that maybe with like countries like Germany or Netherlands and so on, there is a different view of sexuality still. There are some sex-negative people there too, but it's not really as
prevalent.
It's not prevalent, and it's not definitely state-based in the same way. So this is kind of like my analysis also about.
Have you seen that, you know, that brochure that the immigration agency here gives out to new immigrants about sex, where they have colored people of every possible gender and sexuality and disability just going to town on each other? This was a few years back. They probably still produce it, though.
Was it migration agency, or was it RFSL who?
Yeah, it might have been. Yeah. Maybe I was mistaken.
RFSL or RFSU, one of them. Migration had like this brochure about also. Was it Socialstyrelsen or Migrationsverket? They had this about like to you who was married to a child.
Yes, it's a blessed union we that belong to the majority population can only dream of. But if you happen to be married to a child from your country of origin, then, you know, who are we to say that that would be wrong? Because in Sweden, that would be racist. Just like sexualizing the female form would be sexist.
Yeah, I think among some people at least, but I think when it comes to child marriage, the majority of people at least think it's still problematic. But it's interesting that you can find, this is where like the horseshoe theory also becomes a bit interesting, that you can find people both on the extreme left and some people on the right as well, who would try to deproblematize this. Because there are some kind of like cultural relativists on the right as well,
yeah,
who don't necessarily are aspiring for a multicultural society, but are aspiring for more of a pluralistic society that is very amoral, I would say, that does not really take a moral position on what people of other cultures do, as long as it functions in practice. Something that I myself criticize, because I think that is not possible. I don't think that it's possible to establish a place for cultures and value systems that are the extreme opposite of that of the majority society without it causing friction. This is an extremely naive thing to think.
Yes.
Because this will lead to a perpetuation of a parallel society and cultural isolation and friction and tribalism. So this is why I'm very wary about making place for acceptance of Middle Eastern traditionalism or Islamic conservatism in Sweden. I think it's just these value systems are not compatible with the value systems that exist in Sweden. Even out of pragmatism, it does not work, does not fit. And is bound to cause friction and hostility in the long run.
It already has.
Yeah, but I think it might intensify as well, and this would cause more and more ethnic friction. Something that I think a lot about, and I'm trying to think of ways that can reduce that. This is why I'm also have become very, very much for an extremely restrictive migration policy until we have been able to absorb people who have come here to Sweden. It's super naive. And I myself was for open borders. When I came here to Sweden, I was still very left. I got involved with the anti-racist and leftist crowd and so on. But this kind of utopianism, when I started to analyze the material reality in Sweden, it does not work. And you will not be able to help anybody, because the thing is, if you want to do good, you have to have not just the intention to do good, you have to have the intention to do good and the will and the rationality to bring that into reality. If you, for example, say that's just, I want to help people, let's have open borders, you don't understand that you will make everything collapse, including the people that you say that you want to help will be affected by it.
And that was part of your work for GAPF as well, because we've taken in a lot of people to Sweden.
Exactly.
And they have different values, and some of the places they've ended up here are sort of monocultural. They end up with people from the same countries or similar countries, but not many Swedes. And then
exactly. And this is really them. I've been to some schools, for example, to talk about the honor culture issue. And I've been to many schools with high degrees of segregation and high percentage of people born abroad. I've been to schools that basically are totally people of, like, for example, coming from Syria, the whole class, and like even some of the teachers and those kids, they also live in segregated areas. So they have been, geographically in Sweden, but they haven't been demographically in Sweden. They have been living still in Syria, inside of Sweden. And it's just, how can you really
change your points of view or your value system if you marinate in the old value system
exactly.
that you're supposed to have fled from.
Mm-hmm. And also, it makes it also difficult for those within these communities who want to break free from these values to break free. For example, even if I go to a school, for example, that where most of the students come from an honor culture background, if one boy in the class would say, well, I'm okay with my sister having a boyfriend, he will be attacked by others in the class and looked down upon.
Because his sister is a prostitute.
Yes. And that we have terms in Arabic for men who let their family members have sexual relations.
Really? What's that word?
Dayus.
Dayus. Mm. And what does it mean? Is it even possible to translate?
No, it's not really. It is a specific term to a derogatory term to describe men who allow their family members to have sexual relationships without marriage or to be sexually available for men. That includes even not conforming to like dress codes and so on, not to have revealing clothes or whatever. And also another word is ars, and this means that somebody who facilitates one way or the other for their female family members to have sexual relations with others, with other men. So yeah, it's very difficult for a man also to be free in this culture, and at the same time,
because you yourself have experience of this.
Yes, I come from the same background, and I have the same values as well.
And you have a little sister.
Yes, I have two sisters.
Two sisters, yes. That you helped to prevent them from enjoying,
yes,
premarital sex.
Well, that was not even on the table, but I was definitely more of a, yeah, it's expected of especially like the eldest son in the family to control the female members of the family. So I was definitely controlling my sisters and sometimes also my female cousins and so on. Yeah, because I...
None of the other sons or brothers or...
I have only one brother, but it's here's the thing. This kind of like, it's primarily the father who has this duty, and then it's like more and more it's the eldest son who has being, there's a process maybe of indoctrination initiation for him to eventually take that role as well.
But now you've fled your responsibility and your kid brother has to...
Yeah, to some extent, I guess. But... But also, at least my older sister, she's still also like pretty religious. So in that sense, it's not really a problem.
So she lives by the Sharia,
by the codes of how to behave within honor culture and so on.
I see. All right then. That is speaking about this subject always becomes sort of a downer, I think.
Downer. I don't know. I think that's a thing. I think it's just one has to have this is something that my father has taught me that I really appreciate and I have taken to heart. He has told me, face your problems in life with tenacity and fierceness. And I really took that principle. You just have to go forward. Then you just have to, you know, try to bring your principles and your vision in conformity with your actions. And as long as you're living with integrity and your actions reflect your values, I think at least you can satisfy yourself with that you are living an honest life. And this may be what I try to do.
Honest culture.
Honest culture. Let's bring back honest culture. Yes.
Yeah. So thank you for revisiting deconstructive criticism, and I hope I will see you again, Omar. I'm pretty sure I will. And I hope that writing will provide as much meaning as teaching kids to have premarital sex.
And I will thank you, Aaron, and I will continue again also with my work against honor culture, and I will find other ways to go back into schools and talk to the coming generations.
I'm pretty sure you will. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Omar.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you for listening to Deconstructive Criticism. Your guest was Omar Makram. He can be found on Twitter, writing for Bulletin, and in his podcast, Sista Måltiden, in Swedish. In English, it would be Last Supper. And you can find links to all his personals on my webpage in the description of this episode at aaronflam.com. And a big, big thank you for supporting Deconstructive Criticism. You make this production possible. If you don't support me, you can at patreon.com/aaronflam in one word with capital letters, via PayPal, Bitcoin, or on Swish 0768943737. 0768943737. I will be going on a book tour this fall, and you can find tickets on my webpage aaronflam.com/merchandise. The book in question, which we will be discussing on the tour, is This is a Swedish Tiger, a book that landed me in court, and we will be discussing my court case as well. All is available at aaronflam.com/merchandise. And both of these subjects, the book and the trial, will be the subject matter of my part of the talk on the tour. I've been me. Until we speak again, have a pleasant unit of time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.